This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
The Manage Smarter Show is brought to you by SalesCred, the app that helps salespeople discover why they miss quota and what to do about it. Find out more at salescred.com. Welcome to the Manage Smarter podcast with hosts C. Lee Smith and Audrey Strong. We're glad you're here for discussions on new ways to manage smarter, hire, develop, and retain talent, improve results, and propel team performance to new heights. This is the Manage Smarter podcast.
Hey, Lee, have you ever heard of the Trusted Edge Leadership Institute? I believe you have because, boy, you really wanted our guest today, and I'm so thrilled.
I sure did. And obviously, you know, this is one of my favorite topics, having written a book on sales credibility. So I believe credibility is a precursor or a prerequisite to trust. And so that's what we're all going to hear about today is trust, and particularly how trust is absolutely a requirement then for leaders and for managers and direct supervisors of all types.
Welcome to Manage Smarter, everyone. Thanks for listening. My name is Audrey Strong. I'm Vice President of Communications here at SalesFuel.
And I'm C. Lee Smith. I am the founder and CEO of SalesFuel.
And so this gentleman not only speaks your jam, I mean, he's just a wonk. David Horsager is the CEO of the Trust Edge Leadership Institute and a global authority on building high trust teams and organizations where people can perform at their best and get measurable results. David is the trust expert in residence at High Point University, inventor of the Enterprise Trust Index, he'll explain what that is, director of a global study, The Trust Outlook, and a Wall Street Journal bestselling author of The Trust Edge, The Daily Edge, and his latest release is called Trusted Leader. David, thanks for coming today. We sure appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
All right. So we wanted to start off with what is the definition of trust, your definition?
Our definition, you know, you could put a lot of things together. People can say, oh, it's consistency, it's dependability, it's safety. A lot of words can be synonyms to a degree. But the way we define it out of the Institute is trust is a confident belief in a person, product, or an organization. When I can confidently believe in you, everything changes. And that was the first half of the research showed how when trust went up, when we were confident to believe, then that's when we dealt with attrition, engagement, sales, retention, leadership, all those kind of things. So a confident belief. And by the way, for good or bad, I can trust you, you know, I can confidently believe in you to be late because you're late all the time, or I can confidently, you know, good or bad. So I trust, but trust is the root cause and, you know, affects the bottom line more than anything else.
Well, you even talk about how trust is like the number one, according to your research, the number one thing when it comes to retention. You want to talk some more about that?
I believe it, and it can, you know, our global study, very significant, you know, piece every year, Trust Outlook, and we found that the core to retention, the core to so many things when you actually get at it. I mean, you know, I argue this, it's never a leadership issue. The reason you follow a leader not is trust. Not a sales issue. The reason people buy has nothing to do with trust. It's not a innovation issue. When the team trusts each other, they share ideas. It always comes back to that. So number one reason over the last several years, for example, in first world countries, people want to work for an organization is trusted leadership. And the number one reason people leave an organization or the number one driver of retention is increasing trust.
Right. And our research, of course, obviously points back to the direct supervisor, the manager, problems with them. But the number one problem is trust. It's either micromanagement or it's fairness in work assignments or promises made but not kept. You know, it all really revolves around trust. So I believe the two things are similar there.
Absolutely. And you know, what I see to that point a little bit is people say they want to have trust and they say, well, should I have accountability? I know compassion is a pillar of trust. I see actually no accountability or unhealthy accountability. We do need healthy accountability, compassionate, but real, genuine accountability to have high trust cultures.
So you probably work with all different types of organizations. I mean, what is the under the reasonable person test, what is a reasonable or average length of time it takes a leader to build trust? I mean,
well, In one way, you know, we're working with organizations ongoing, but a lot of, but just to give a little spark to the message here, a lot of your trust is built and lost in a moment. You know, we think it takes a long time to build trust. And in the first book I wrote about how, you know, the sequoia trees, 1,000 years old, whatever, 100, you know, 1,000 feet high and all this, and it takes a long time to build. And yet, if we remember that year, the camper that burned down the sequoias, I mean, you know, in a touch of carelessness, you can burn a whole forest down. But as I've looked at it deeper, you know, a whole lot of trust is actually built and lost in a moment. You think of, when is your opportunity the fastest? When is your opportunity to build trust the fastest? People might think it's first interaction, and first interaction is critical, but it's not the fastest. Your fastest opportunity to build trust is in crisis. You got a pandemic, you got some change, you got blockchain whipping the world upside down, you got people ticked off at you, you got people throwing chairs in boardrooms. You have an incredible opportunity to build trust faster than ever before if your customers are mad at you. But it's how you respond. You can also lose it faster than ever in crisis. Mm-hmm. When was George W. Bush the most trusted as president? The week after 9/11. Right. How we respond in crisis matters more than ever as far as speed to trust. But to your earlier point, you know, trust, it can be built fast or lost fast. That's an overarching. As far as our work with organizations, we're in organizations. If you're really trying to, we believe, build a high-performing culture built on trust, then it takes time. Now, we had one massive organization that you all know say they gained 11% market share in 1 year using this work. We had one, our first, right after my grad work, when we used this in an organization, this is when we knew we had something, you know, a couple decades ago. And this organization said they saved, a small organization, 600 people. They were bleeding attrition, 14 health clinics. And they said they saved $2 to $4 million in attrition costs in 9 months when they started creating a common language of real trust. So you know, now it can take a lot longer. We're dealing with corruption issues in East Africa that have been around for hundreds of years. We're dealing with pro sports teams issues. We're dealing with it depends, but you can actually do something about it. The work of trust, the great thing about it is it's the work that actually leads to real change. It's not the cover up. It's not this thing of get rich quick. It's the real work that actually can drive something. Even if it drives it slowly, it's driving the real.
So you mentioned the pandemic, and during the pandemic, we've all been forced into work from home. And now it's like, now we have sort of like a hybrid type of work environment. And you say that the number one thing that helps people succeed in a virtual work environment is the ability to trust your employer.
Yes.
And so my question is that, how is that possible when so many times the employer doesn't show that they trust the employee, whether it be stuff like monitoring keystrokes or listening on phone conversations or checking to see if they're at their desk or anything like that? Right. So what advice can you give the managers then for, you know, building the employee's ability to trust them?
Well, first of all, I can put my feet in both shoes. I think both sides can really judge the other. And I don't agree with keystrokes and putting something under your bun so we know if you stood up or not. but on the other hand, you know, there's been plenty of employees that ripped off managers and ripped off companies and did just go walk their dog all day and quiet quit and not do anything. So I think it's unfair. There's a lot of people that have moved. You know, a lot of times we have pendulums that move both ways in consulting. It's way over here and it's this, and it's way over here and it's this. And it's like, oh, those, you know, it's now it's really moved toward the employee. But the employees have been as corrupt and ripped people off as the managers have. So you have to work on this together. And so for you asked the point about managers, the managers that have done well in remote, I believe have really thought about, you know, there's 8 pillars of trust. You know, they don't spit out of research as pillars. They're you know, key characteristics of trust or whatever, but they've really focused on the connection pillar. People want to connect. Human connection still matters, with the commitment or contribution pillar, which is you actually have to get results. You actually have to have healthy accountability. So you have to mix these, because we actually can't just say, okay, now it's all about the employee and it's just connect and give them every possible benefit and they'll work their life for you. Some of them actually get every possible benefit and they don't. And on the other hand, you have leaders that are micromanaging and are like, you got to check in and call me every hour. And they're getting, those employees are getting killed. So it is a mix. This is the complexity. You know, just to give a fun little complexity of trust thing, we think, oh, trust, it's so, it's just, I've had people say, oh, it's just transparency. No. Some of your kids are so transparent on social media. I don't trust them for a second because it's also confidentiality. So we have these mixed, trust is more complex than we might think. And building
very nuanced.
Building it takes work. Mm-hmm. And that's why it takes both accountability and connection to have healthy work from home. And we have frameworks for all that, but they're a little much for this short time.
Right.
Well, you know, one of the things that you mentioned is absolutely critical for managers and leaders of all types, and that's clarity. Yeah, so especially then
number one,
spelling out what the expectations are. Totally. You know, so you want to talk a little bit more about that?
So, yeah, that's the first pillar of trust. People trust the clear and they mistrust or distrust the ambiguous or the overly complex. And, you know, where I was a professor, we want to look complex, right? We want to look smart. Whenever we overcomplexify beyond what is needed, we lose clarity, which always loses trust. The greatest leaders today are the greatest simplifiers. Clarity wins, and it's at a different level than most of you are thinking. Most of the marketing experts and strategy experts and branding experts I'm working with are not thinking about clarity in the level I'm talking about. I'm talking so simplified and clear.
A five-year-old needs to be able to understand
yes,
it, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So clarity. In a lot of ways, I'm going to give you one thing because you talked about attrition or retention. Here's one thing we're finding, new piece of research. One way to increase retention, first of all, let me say this about clarity. Clarity is massive. Clarity of vision, clarity of expectations, clarity of benefits, clarity of this, that. We can spend a whole 2 days just on clarity in an organization. And when they get clear about things, you know, everything changes, unity, alignment, a host of things. But one little tip would be this. We find people stay longer, retention goes up, and attrition goes down if we simply get clear about one thing, the employee's role and how they win, like how do they fit in the mission? A lot of people have their job description or whatever, but if you can in one sentence say, hey, I help our mission and organization win by doing this. If they can state that, know that, tie that to the mission, that one sentence increases retention. One little tip.
Interesting. I watched one of your shows on YouTube. It's got a great YouTube channel, everybody. Be sure and look it up. What this concept of radical candor, and it seems a little bit scary to me and maybe off-putting to some people who aren't necessarily wanting to receive messages that way. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of that or the use of it?
Well, you know, things often need to be taught to be palatable. Right. Mm. So like we have a how process. And here's how it can sound if someone hasn't been taught it. How, like you're killing them. But when we in our environment, like people understand, get to a how that you can do today or tomorrow. And everybody knows that's what we're doing when we drill down on how and we don't do it meanly. And we want to keep that number two pillar, the compassion pillar there. But you have to have this openness. The radical candor, that episode, I believe it's the one that is with the CEO or of an organization that really bought into that. And actually what they learned was you can go too far also on certain things. So some of these things, like I've already said, they have to be nuanced. I believe, I don't like it when consultants come in and say, well, it's always this way or it's always this way. In fact, I'm writing a book on tension called Tensions these days. About how we have to live between tensions, like the early bird gets the worm, but be patient. Well, what should I do this time? You know, persevere through the wall or pivot. Some people persevered in the pandemic too far. Some people pivoted too early. You can do, you know, one, we have to think. On the other hand, I am absolute by something about something, and that is trust. It always, always, always is absolute truth. Trust always is the key driver to a trend, you know, retention and sales, speeding up sales and all these things. But radical candor, it really just points to this culture where we can really speak truth, hopefully in love, but quickly. And there can be really real value to that when there's trust. If there isn't trust, though, it can be off-putting, unfair. It can be if you don't show empathy first. There's a lot. There's a mix to that. But you know, the bigger problem is many people don't have a safe place for openness and clarity, and it's slowing them down. They don't even know it.
So there's the old axiom that if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. So how do you measure trust?
Peter Drucker, yeah. So we, you know, back in my grad work, I worked with a couple PhDs and my grad work to, so we in essence, we have six ways we measure trust, six assessment tools we use to measure trust. And we think, you know, I hope without ego, but a whole lot of, you know, work across six continents and across industries, we think they're better than many things, certainly than engagement surveys. You don't get engagement with engagement. You have to increase trust to get engagement. So we have everything from an enterprise trust index that measures trust in a whole organization. 82 questions. It's built on my grad work and 30 years of Accenture data and all that, all the way down to a customer assessment, simple 5-question assessment that would compete with a net promoter score. We know you don't get referrals from referrals. You get referrals when you increase trust. So what are the 5 drivers to get referrals? Down to a simple self-assessment, a team assessment that you can assess teams and then close gaps. And in 90 days, see, are we increasing trust? So we're increasing efficiency and productivity. So we have them. Most of them, 5 of them are actually, you know, on our platform that people can get access to and use if it's that's a getting certified and then using them. As far as how that goes, we certify folks and they can use them in their organization. We have one that is a simple consulting conversational diagnostic that you can just talk through with your leadership team, these 24 questions. And funny enough, you've got all these validated assessments. That one that you just talked through can be as true as anything. Just talking through it with people and saying, yeah, where do you feel like we are 1 out of 10? They can often come up exactly the same as the whole valid, go online, do all this stuff. So it's interesting. But we're always measuring against our valid framework of the 8-pillar framework. So trust is built in these 8 ways. And so if people ever see my work, the 8-pillar framework, you'll see me say often, you never have a leadership issue, it's a trust issue. You never have I'll also say, you never have a communication issue. Oh, it's communication. No, communication's happening all the time. Clear communication is trusted, clarity pillar. Unclear isn't. Compassion is trusted, hateful communication isn't. High character is trusted, dishonest communication isn't trusted. Competent communication is trusted, incompetent isn't. So when we drive against these 8 and measure against these 8, we're really measuring how trust is built and we can actually do something about it. That's the fun of it. We can see trust go up.
So how do you measure integrity?
So we take, as far as integrity, which, funny enough, people have argued with me that Hitler had more integrity than Churchill. So it's also in the definition.
That's a whole other show right there.
Wow.
That's right.
So I can tell you this. That's why in my first book, I define character as a mix of integrity and moral character. Because you could say, well, Hitler, he got up at a certain time. He didn't even drink coffee. He was so absolute. And if integrity is simply being the same in thoughts, words, and actions, he probably did have more. But if you combine it with the person that really saved us from the darkest hour of the 20th century, who had some moral character, even though he drank late at night and did other things, he had a moral character. To me, first of all, for the character pillar, you have to put integrity and character together, a certain type, and then you get what you meant, I know. But as far as how do you define that, so depending on the assessment we're using, we've locked into key behaviors that show that pillar, which for us would be the character pillar. So what are the behaviors that show that honesty or
you're reading my mind?
So in our 360 assessment, it's 5 behaviors that drive care. In our self-assessment, we judge 3. In the big enterprise trust index, we're judging the character of our individual leaders and of the organization. So we're just getting to behaviors that ultimately reflect that pillar and the consistency of those.
Well, going back to your example, let's never confuse predictability with integrity.
Absolutely.
Lee, you also had a question. Out of the 8, which one is consistently the most problematic for leaders of the 8? Hardest to achieve.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are 2, clarity and consistency. I mean, okay. Clarity is so difficult because this world is changing so fast, and so it's so hard to be clear. I mean, I can tell you, if you're not sharing your company's values at least every 14 days, nobody's living by them, making decisions by them consistently, which is the only reason to have them. So if you're not sharing your vision, because if you're not, you can lose clarity because of a lack of consistency. So that's the first and last pillar, right? Clarity is difficult, but clarity, boy, you can do something about clarity and see results in 2 weeks. Character might take longer. Commitment might take longer to see. Clarity is work. Clarity of, but I'll give you a little breath here, very simple, for clarity, how it affects each person. And how, so a leader might not be trusted because they're not clear about the vision. A manager might not be trusted because they're not clear about expectations. A salesperson might not be getting sales, even though they're super clear about how cool they are. Mm-hmm. And how long they've been in business. Nobody cares, as you guys know. But they're not clear about the benefits of that product or service to me, so I don't buy. The school teacher might have compassion and character. The kids start to hate the teacher. Why is that? They find out that teacher is unclear about the assignment, so the kids go home frustrated. So in each of those cases, it was a clarity issue, but clarity, it takes work to keep it. And there's so many messages today. This we work on and we get clear, and you can see so many things happen. Alignment, speed, unity, sales, you know, getting clear about the right thing. But consistency would just be the other one, because as I said before, if you're late all the time, I'll trust you to be late. You are trusted for whatever you do consistently.
You're predictable, right?
Exactly.
So on commitment, though, it's like don't ask or expect me to be committed if you're not committed. You know, so as the leader or whatever, if you're not committed,
I had this big, you'd all know the company. I'm asked to keynote at this big event. I remember it was at Disney, 5,000 salespeople. This new SVP of sales at this company said, I read your first book. I love that chapter on commitment. Can you just go tell my team to be committed, my people to be committed to me? And I'll never forget this, because I thought he was joking. And then I saw he's serious. And this SVP of this massive organization, he got up there in front of those 5,000 people for the first time ever. And I watched him lose his team in 30 seconds with his lack of sincerity, authenticity, and ego. And he was committed to himself. He got up there. His first talk is all about how they need to make it about him. And it was like, you're done. And so yes, commitment breeds commitment. When I don't usually get it without giving it, but when I give commitment to them, things change. One other point on commitment, we have a big process for how you rebuild trust, 10 steps, whatever. But I will say something that can be eye-opening for some people. When people ask me, how do you rebuild trust? It is not the apology. You never rebuild trust on the apology. I'm not saying don't apologize. I'm certainly not saying don't be humble. It's critical for trust, but you don't rebuild trust. You only rebuild trust when you make and keep a new commitment. It's the only way you rebuild it. I have to see you make and keep a new commitment. You might open the door of communication with an apology, absolutely, but you don't rebuild it unless you make and keep a new commitment. We have many people say, well, I apologize. I'm sorry I'm late. No, you're not sorry you're late. You're late every time, even after you say that. So just because we say we're sorry doesn't mean we've rebuilt trust, even though it's worth apologizing.
And over I don't remember a protracted the source. Length of time, I might add.
Yeah. I don't remember the source, but there's a study then that shows that, you know, about 40% of people then will trust you until you're proven yourself untrustworthy. And there's about a third of people that says, no, you have to show me you're trustworthy right. first
Absolutely.
And demonstrate that before I trust you. So in a case where you've lost trust, you already have the third of people that don't trust you till you've proven it. Then you've got the other bigger percentage then, because you've proven yourself untrustworthy. So now you've pretty much lost almost everybody.
And the way we did that actually study, and in the U.S. side, we asked people, you know, how many of you lead with skepticism? In other words, you have to build trust until you've built it over time, or you lead with trust. In other words, I trust you until you've lost it. The point for leaders under this one, though, is you got to do the same thing either way. You got to build mm-hmm. trust every day.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter if they're this or this. Some people want to say to me, well, those people, they're so skeptical. I can't. You know what? In many cases, something terrible happened to them before they were 18 years old that wasn't even their fault. And the bottom line is, whether they lead with skepticism or trust, you have to build it every day, and you can. This idea that we either have it or we don't is baloney.
Totally.
You can build trust every day. It takes work, but it's the most important work you can be about.
Well, your website is trustedge.com. Also, davidhorsager.com for the podcast on there. And then your LinkedIn, dhorsager. This has been great. I mean, what an eye opener. And I love the fact that there's real tangible ROI out of all of this.
Thank you so much for having me. Hey, for just a treat to be with you and share this message I'm certainly passionate about.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and recommend on iTunes, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also get more great information at salesfuel.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.